Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Eric, we already have Adam Cole not trusting Kyle O'Reilly again. It took like a week. And it was that spot that seems to only happen when it can be blown out of proportion, a mistaken kick or punch of some kind within a tag team match. I have suggested that wrestling promoters and producers and wrestlers incorporate that spot into a few matches where it's not blown way out of proportion, maybe by a couple baby faces or heels who just brushed it off so it doesn't feel so contrived. That said, I am intrigued with Cole leaving with the Bucks and O'Reilly and Fish being left behind to have their arms raised. You know, they are definitely playing up this idea that the Bucks, and we saw this on Being the Elite this week too, the Bucks are not on board with O'Reilly showing up without being notified ahead of time. How do you grade so far the introduction of O'Reilly and the developments tonight with the five key players, with, of course, a sixth key player, Kenny Omega, on the sidelines for the time being?
They have a ways to go. I think they clearly plan to stretch this out for quite a while. And so if you're into episodic television, they certainly did an episodic thing tonight with a little cliffhanger with the Bucks getting custody of Adam Cole this week after Red Dragon, the former Red Dragon, maybe the future Red Dragon, got custody of him at the end of
They did call him Red Dragon.
So you know, one of the problems is there's heat between O'Reilly and Cole. I don't know that they can explain why that is. If you're a wrestling fan, you know why that is. If you watch NXT, because they were beating the hell out of each other in NXT, a blood feud that ended when Adam Cole left their promotion, right?
Yes.
But they can't really get into that unless they want to talk about NXT in a great level of detail, and they don't seem inclined to do that. Maybe they can't do that, worried about a cease and desist letter or something. But I think they could probably do a better job of explaining who Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly were as a team. Can they get some video from Ring of Honor or PWG to use? Excalibur would seem to have some stroke in PWG. Or show some of the classic Buck Red Dragon matches from back then. You know, give us a little bit more context. Maybe that's going to come in the weeks, right? They plan to stretch this out for a while because Kenny Omega's not going to be around for a while. And, you know, ultimately you figure that's where this has ended up, Kenny Omega and the Bucks versus Adam Cole and O'Reilly and Fish. A twist could be Omega coming back with Red Dragon against Cole and the Bucks, right, at the end of Full Gear. The Bucks did not prevent Adam Page from defeating Kenny Omega. They gave him the head nod, as a matter of fact. And so, you know, that would be a twist they could do for when Omega is ready to come back. What do you think? Have they set this up well enough so far?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're at the early stage of what will be kind of a roller coaster ride. My main concern, and I'll comment a little bit more on some of the things you said, is I don't think there should be developments on Being the Elite that don't get up that Dynamite viewers or Rampage viewers aren't updated on. And not that it was a major development, but, you know, they could have like done more with that. And they didn't show a clip of that like that I missed the day before the match or in the lead up.
No, but they reenacted it with that bizarre, why was Brendan Cutler filming them? And even after Cole asked everybody to leave, why was he still filming them? So you got a taste of that, I guess, a little bit from, at least from the other side.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I hope that we don't see storyline developments that aren't in Dynamite proper. It's one of the things that Cody Rhodes said that, you know, has been repeated a lot. Everything that happens on Dynamite or everything that happens in AEW that counts should be aired on Dynamite, if not live, by recap. What was the term he used?
Shoulder content?
Yeah, shoulder content. Thank you. Yeah, just like you can't have storylines develop with shoulder content. And when you say, oh, you know, maybe AEW will explain this, I'm waiting for them to, you know, the Fish and O'Reilly connection, AEW very much caters to a fan base that just knows. And, you know, Tony Khan's on social media all the time. He knows everything. And I think there's sort of – and it's a wrestling company with wrestlers who are obsessed with wrestling, you know, like really into it. And in more so than probably any other company in that sense, it's built around them. So I think there is sometimes to a fault in a way that might alienate some fans. And we hear from them on the show, people who are WWE viewers, but they've never seen – Kenny Omega in New Japan, and they want to know more about him, or they have no idea of the history of the Bucks and Red Dragon, and they want to be told that on Dynamite. They don't want to have homework. So I say all that because I'm not holding out great hope that AEW will. I think, you know, there's a core of fans, a million plus fans, who are just like, don't waste our time. We know that. But, you know, if you're trying to grow, the more you know, friendly it seems to newbies, the better. Without just, you know, explaining everything to them always. But, you know, I think there's a middle ground where it doesn't seem like you're just completely, you know, going out of your way to explain basic stuff to new AEW fans, but catch them up. There's a limitation of footage, but I mean, there's photos that they could certainly get the rights to and just tell the story. Even a 30-second vignette or 1 minute, you know, video package would be enough. I mean, it's all there implied. You can kind of connect the dots, but yeah, I'm with you. There's a rich history here, and there's a lot of assumed knowledge. But getting back to your point, yeah, I think we're on a roller coaster ride. I like Fish and O'Reilly with Kenny more, especially with what Cole and O'Reilly went through in NXT. They have incorporated that into their universe. That is, you know, this is not like, you know, sometimes call-ups from NXT where Vince McMahon just wipes the slate clean and starts fresh. They are acknowledging that for sure. So if they're going to, that was a really intense feud. And I would be fine with Kenny O'Reilly and Fish against the Bucks and Cole as how it all settles, you know, when the dust settles, how everyone's standing. Who is it obvious to you who the baby faces would be in that scenario, or would you not need baby faces? What would you do if that is how it shook out?
You don't necessarily need baby faces, but I mean, given the reactions Cole gets from the fans, you would think he's slide him in as a baby face, unless you have I guess it depends on how long you want Adam Cole to be in this angle. Do you have plans to have him challenge for the world title in 2022? I guess that depends on who your champion is. You don't need to, but Cole and the Bucks probably would be the faces, I would think. Fish and O'Reilly are more naturally heels than they are faces, and Kenny can do either way.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. Just because the Bucks have been so good as heels, but you know, it's a tough call. I think O'Reilly and Fish and Kenny could be effective baby faces in this role. But I mean, you're right. The fans are predisposed to like Cole. His intro song pops crowds. Obviously, there's a lot of things fans like to chant along with Cole, and they're into his act. The Bucks going through a personality amplifying heel run could I think help their effectiveness as a babyface team. They were just kind of blah, and especially Nick at times just looking lost before they turned heel. And so if you can take that energy and that charisma and the bravado that they're bringing now and combine it with Cole as a babyface trio, that works. But then, you know, Fish and O'Reilly and Kenny have to be really on board being strong heels. And that means there has to be some chemistry with Kenny, O'Reilly, and Fish that develops in a way where fans, you know, want to see them lose. It's fun. It's a good, however it shakes out with those six, I'm on board for watching it play out for the next few months.
You are probably going to be watching that for the next few months, would be my guess.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing you're on board with it.
Absolutely. All right, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then get to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, December 29th, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, chronicling professional wrestling since the late 1980s. And also the host of this, the Wade Keller Post Show, and also the Wade Keller Podcast. And tomorrow on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, Thursday flagship, Todd Martin will be back as my co-host. And we will talk about everything that's happened over the last week in wrestling on TV and news-wise, and also look ahead to what's coming up. So be sure to download that show. If you haven't subscribed to it, just search Wade Keller. You'll see the blue logo and the red logo. Subscribe to both and you will get all those shows for free, or you can get them with ads and plugs edited out through Patreon for $4.99 a month. Is it $4.99 or is it? Yeah, $4.99 a month. That sounded less than it should be. But yeah, $4.99 a month, says the guy plugging it. At Patreon, patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. A lot of other bonuses come with that, and there's different tiers with different options, but check that out. The other voice you hear, speaking of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, is a former and sort of current contributor to PW Torch in many ways. He was a Pro Wrestling Torch columnist back circa 1990 when we were both college students. And after a long time away from wrestling, raising his family, he is back. New Japan and AEW brought him back. And he is now a frequent co-host here on the show. He's participated in some other podcasts that the Torch has put out on the VIP side of things and on the free side of things also. And he has written a really nice piece on Hangman Adam Page that was in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter a month or so back and working on another one. So, Eric, welcome back.
Wow. Thanks for the glow up there, Wade Keller.
I don't want to hear your voice, so I thought I would just say everything so we didn't have to see
it. Yes, it is good to be in love with the sound of your own voice. I would agree. I normally like Dynamite. I did not like tonight's show. I thought there was a lot of swings and misses. We can get into that now. We can.
Yeah. Let's get the callers. And then
we can unpack. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what callers have to say. I like to keep them on hold the shortest amount possible after our opening topic and then broaden things out. We'll get into that. That's interesting. Because there was, on paper, a lot of multi-man matches, a lot of referees having to ignore things or count really slowly, as Jim Ross noted. Jim Ross back tonight. It was great to see him. It was great that he declared he is cancer-free after 20-some treatments for skin cancer this month, and I thought they did a nice job paying tribute to him. CM Punk paying tribute to Brody Lee, who died a year ago on Christmas, with real kind comments about Brody Lee the person, and how the tribute show that AEW did for him was one of the reasons Punk wanted to come work for AEW. We'll get into that. But first things first, we're going to get the phone calls. Our phone number, if you are listening to our live stream at WadeKellerPostShow.com, by the way, you can find a direct link to the show at pwtorch.com in my reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, or on our Twitter feed at pwtorch, or you can just find a link to the live show on our website, WadeKellerPostShow.com. So if you're live streaming us, thank you, and you can give us a call. Our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on our switchboard, so we know you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can call that number and just listen in. If you have already called in and want to be on the show, at any time you can push 1, and that'll put you in the queue to be brought onto the program. You can also participate by emailing us, especially if you aren't able to listen to the live stream because you've got things to do after the TV shows end. You can still email us and be part of the show and then listen back later. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. So with that business out of the way, let's get to calls. And we're going to start with Hitton in London, Ontario. Hitton, you are first up. Welcome. Thank you for calling. Early Happy New Year. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
Yeah. Hey, Eric. Hey, Wade. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Hope you guys had a good one. I thought this show was annoying. Initially, I was like, I was getting pissed off while watching this show, and I couldn't really understand why. And then I realized, oh, this show has all the trappings of everything that was bad about the pandemic era of AEW. And so I managed to figure that out. But I'm going to say something. I have something positive to say as well, but I'll save that for the end. I want to start just building off the Bucks and Cole, Red Dragon stuff. I don't get the story with respect to the Bucks at all. This goes back to Full Gear. I get why they probably wouldn't interfere in the match between Kenny and Hangman. Hangman threatened them on Rampage, and that's fine. However, I still don't understand why they walked out and endorsed him if they were going to remain douchebag heels. That just doesn't square in my mind. I don't know what the follow-up to that is. I also disagree that Red Dragon would be better with Kenny because, I mean, think about it. If Kenny stays the way he is, right, as this sort of comedic guy who's kind of been comedic both as a babyface and a heel, I don't want Red Dragon to be stained with that. I'd rather you just keep the comedy guys, Omega and the Bucks together versus serious opposition in Adam Cole and Red Dragon. So what do you guys make of that?
Yeah, Eric, your take on Hinton's point of view there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody said it was better for Kenny Omega to be with Red Dragon, just that it could be a potential swerve, because how you would expect it to go is Kenny and the Bucks versus Cole and Red Dragon, and I'd be completely fine with that. I think they've either permutation tears the house down. I, too, like Hinton, am curious to see what happens when Kenny Omega comes back. He did a promo on the Dynamite after he lost the belt at Full Gear, and I believe he deliberately put in a line saying, I haven't even had a chance to watch the match yet, to explain why he was backstage with the Bucks doing a promo. And he did seem to be he put over Hangman, said he was the better man that night. So that is hanging out there, and they tend to long-term story plan in AEW. And so what happens when Kenny Omega sees the video, watches it back, and how does he react to the Bucks? That's the only reason.
Yep.
I threw that out as a potential twist and a curve as a way to go against the grain.
I guess, would hope they don't ignore that, Eric.
Yeah, I mean the Bucks, Hangman, and Kenny have tended to pay off their long-term stuff they've put in. I mean they seem to be pretty well thought out. I guess we're at the beginning of this thing, and it's I know you are told this in WWE all the time, let it play out. I have a lot more confidence that AEW will pay something off, whether you like to pay off or not. That's another thing entirely. But in WWE, they often don't even pay it off. So we're at the end. It's a marathon. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Hinton, your follow up on that or another topic?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not a fan of just, oh, our friend is injured, so let's just go back to being bad guys and then we'll pay it off later. I think that makes about as much sense as anything WWE would do. So, I mean, color me disappointed with it, but I want to move on to something I liked on this show. I thought the match with between Cargill and Rosa was actually really good for a Cargill match. I'm not going to call it a Matt Classic, but I thought Rosa did everything she could to bring the best out of Cargill, and I think they largely succeeded in what they were trying to do with the outside brawling. At no point did I cringe or think they were too ambitious or dangerous for Cargill's experience. As far as work alone, this was like, you know, when Rock came back to wrestle Cena, not for the first time, but I think the second match, I think as far as work rate goes, it's sort of on par with that match. And I'm also just thinking about the other stuff we saw in the show, like a bunch of women's mid-card stuff, right? Like we have the debut of Mercedes Martinez, so Rosa immediately has someone to go after. Ruby Soho will now have her chance at defeating Cargill. And we're reminded of Chris Statlander and Layla Hirsch, who started the storyline on Rampage. And Serena Deeb and Hikaru Shida are continuing their program, which is just based largely on ring psychology. I'm not too fond of Deeb as a heel. I think she plays the role well, but she's just too likable, I think, outside the ring for me to really buy her as this. But, you know, I'm glad we got to see a bunch of and also the Anna Jay, Ty Conti versus Bunny and Penelope Ford. So we've got a strong women's mid-card now. Compare that to a year ago. I haven't even mentioned the women's world champion. I haven't even mentioned Britt Baker, right? So we're sort of it sort of snuck up on me how much stronger the AEW women's mid-card is now compared to how it was just a year ago. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, I mean, Jade Cargill is coming along. Eric, talk about her slow and steady progress. They, you know, having them brawl at ringside for a good portion of the match while the ref had to count like this. One, pretend it's 12 seconds later. Two, three, like, the really slow count with the break to the count, but it did help mask what is still a very green, worker, but she's she's made significant progress, or they're asking her to do more. And it does add some depth because she's a strong, distinct personality. And Smart Mark Sterling, I think, is an effective manager for her. I liked it pretty close to from the beginning. Not exactly at the beginning, but they won me over pretty quick. And there is more depth now. I feel like there's what feels like a full-fledged women's division without having to put people out there who just have no connection with a crowd or just don't look ready for primetime. Your thoughts?
I think Hinton nailed it when he's there are probably the most women's programs that are obvious and identifiable going on in AEW in its entire history. It usually used to be they would literally just set up one match and they'd have one program going at a time, and sometimes there was a build-up to it, and sometimes they just throw two women out there cold. But now we have multiple programs going on at once, so that's a positive. The best thing I can say about this Cargill-Rosa match was, how about that Mercedes Martinez interference and run-in at the end? This match was not good. Thunder Rosa did what she could. I wondered how much smoke and mirrors they would have, and the smoke and mirrors were at the start with all of the out-of-the-ring shenanigans at the start. It's Cargill's 23rd match, if you include the Battle Royal she was in at All Out. And so has Cargill made progress? Yes, but there's a difference between going from 0 to 5 when you need to get to 25, right? And I don't – she's not ready. They're probably going to put the TBS title on her because she has a ton of charisma and upside. It's just too soon. But, you know, Tony Khan has some pressure because he's got representation issues, especially when it comes to black wrestlers. He gets dragged over the coals on Twitter a lot for that. I can't tell how much of it is WWE fans being bad faith actors and how much of it is legitimate, but certainly a significant chunk of it is probably legitimate. And so he's going to put the belt on Cargill and she's not ready. And I like it when promotions put wrestlers in a position to succeed and not fail. I don't know that Ruby Soho she's not as good of a worker as Thunder Rosa. Is she going to be able to carry Cargill to a passable match next week, or are they just going to keep it really short? One of the things I did like is that Rosa, you know, was protected in the finish, especially, starts a hot feud with Mercedes Martinez that will probably have some of the best matches, women's matches in AEW history. Rosa did not get much in-ring offense on Cargill besides that figure four that I saw. And
it requires
Cargill's
selling.
Yeah, and Cargill's kipping up when she's supposed to be selling the leg. It's like, come on. I can't tell
you. Well, she sold the leg after kipping up, at least. I mean, she really did grab her leg and limp for a little bit. I want to give credit where it's due.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be able to kip up if you're truly injured. And, you know, I cannot tell you if Jade Cargill or Hook know how to sell because they haven't had to do it yet.
Taking shots at Hook, wow. Out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, we haven't seen that facet of Hook's arsenal yet, so we don't know if it exists, and that's mostly true with Cargill. And so I guess I wasn't as high on this match as maybe some others. But since we're picking nits here, have Riho and Britt? I guess Riho and Britt Baker. I was there in Chicago the night before Thanksgiving when they taped that Rampage match where Riho got the upset on Baker to set up this January 5th title match. But other than the in-ring Riho going over the assistant, the Jamie Hayter, have they done much of anything other than promos by Britt to promote that match? It feels a little cold to me, and it started off, you know, at least relatively hot or maybe lukewarm.
Yeah, no, I don't think they have, and this, you know, would have been a good week to maybe have something with Britt Baker. Not a holiday-themed backstage thing with Tony, just a straight-up promo. You know, Riho's going to be limited in that regard. Instead, we got Hikaru Shida talking, which felt like, in terms of how you use your TV time, you know, this would have been a good week to promote that match, especially because it's a big deal moving to TBS. Hit, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up on anything Eric Rice said or anything else you want to bring up.
Yeah, I did want to very quickly say that the when you mentioned the referee slow cutting, they actually did multiple roll in and out of the rings. I don't know if you noticed that during the while typing up the report, but they actually rolled in and out to break the count multiple times. I was actually very carefully watching the match, so they did. I think they probably rehearsed it well enough. But yeah, I'm curious to see where these programs
go.
That
was still a slow count. That still was a very slow count by the referee in between rolling in the ring to break the count. Like, I think they did definitely get past 10 seconds.
The worst part would have been if they had to be the worst part would have been if they had to be in the ring. Then you get five more minutes of that. Are you kidding me? No, thank God they were out of the ring and that ref counted slow. Smoke and mirrors, baby.
That is the point, you know, and that's the point I made. I mean, I'm watching this going, that's a long time fight at ringside, but they are trying to protect Jade Cargill. I mean, the pro wrestling isn't about good matches. It's about drawing money. And good matches have to be part of it, but part of that is having people who stand out like Jade Cargill does, who you're bringing along. And if you're going to feature her on TV and have better wrestlers creating a lot of movement around her and trying to, you know, eke out a passable match with her limited experience, you've got to be creative. And I mean, I'm just giving them points for creativity. If they're going to push Jade Cargill, which I'm not against, I think she is, you know, marketable. And I think having her in that match next week is a good decision. You know, Ruby Soho has her work cut out for her in terms of coming up with similar shortcuts to try to create a full-fledged match. Cause you don't want, you know, Jade Cargill only having, you know, 90-second matches and beating established top people. And that's who she's facing now in Thunder Rosa and Ruby Soho. I think Thunder Rosa, if that's the best she can get out of Cargill, I think Thunder's probably more capable on paper than Ruby Soho. Athletically, we will see experience and, you know, just what Ruby had to do in WWE if she brings something else in terms of match planning and execution. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Not, you know, I don't need every match to be great to be intrigued by it, and I'm intrigued by this matchup next week. Hitting. Back to you.
Yeah, fair enough with that. I'll probably need to rewatch. But how would you guys feel about AEW adopting the New Japan style of countouts, where they actually there's actually someone at ringside with a microphone, literally counting, and instead of 10 counts, they do 20 counts. So that we still have, because I think one of the reasons they probably are hesitant to do it is, you need, you know, the Young Bucks and Private Party, et cetera. They need time outside the ring to do their stuff. So instead of a 10 count, just make it a 20 count and just sort of wrestle under those rules. Do you think that would be adopted well enough by the mainstream American wrestling audience?
I think it'd be annoying on television. And, you know, I think one thing we've learned, Eric, is AW also thinks, you know, yes, they, in their press release, said we're going to have a point system and, or a win-loss record, and we're going to be more sports-like, but they don't want to be particularly bothered by adhering tightly to referees and tag team rules and count-out rules. I just think there's been a decision by Tony Khan that's not a top priority. They want to tell their stories, logic, and rules be damned. And, you know, we can debate how important it is. My preference would be to lean more towards telling the wrestlers, work within the rules, you know, find a way to work within a reasonable 10 count. It doesn't have to be one second for each count, but it shouldn't be more than like a second and a half. It starts to sound pretty ridiculous, and I think that becomes distracting. Jim Ross clearly is annoyed and can't help but bring up the referee is certainly playing loose with the rules tonight, you know, in terms of how long a count out is and all that. It's the referee distractions that go on forever and absurdly when there's all the stuff going on behind them that I think just makes wrestling look ridiculous. And I just don't think you should, as a wrestler or as a promoter overseeing the wrestlers, allow wrestling to look needlessly ridiculous. And their lack of adherence to kind of staying within the structure of tag rules and countout rules does. That said, a 20 count might be good. Having a loud count 1 to 20 on television every time there's action at ringside, I think would not make for good television. It might work better at house shows, but that's not really AEW's business. Eric, your thoughts?
I'm glad we've established that it's old fuddy-duddies like you and JR who are very concerned about the rules being enforced at all times. I guess to me, if you're not going to enforce the countout strictly, I like using it as a tool to add drama to the match. Is a guy or a gal going to roll back into the ring in time, or are they going to be counted out? And so Hinton raises a really good point here. Having watched a ton of New Japan the last several years, when the count is 20, so like when he's counting the double digit numbers, the team numbers, it's a two syllable thing, and it's really exciting, and the guy gets a really loud, high, you know, kind of high pitched voice, 16, 18, and it does add an element of excitement to the match. Oh my God, is he going to get rolled back in the ring in time? And every now and again, I think they go to a countout finish to remind the fans, hey, matches can end via countout, and we will count the wrestler out. So I wouldn't be averse to that. The problem in New Japan is they do that spot sometimes in every match, and then it becomes less effective.
All right, very good. Hinton, back to you if you have anything else before I move on.
Yeah, I think that's all my points. I'll let you guys kind of just get to the Cody Rhodes stuff on your own, because I've ranted about him enough in my comments. So everyone, go VIP. Happy New Year, Eric and Wade.
Thank you, Hinton. Appreciate it. Happy New Year. Always great to hear from you. All right, we'll go next to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland, and then on deck will be Nick in Brattleboro. Ryan, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
This Dan Lambert storyline has me sort of intrigued. Is it possible if he did a singles match with Brandy that this match could be so bad that it could be good?
Is it so bad it could be good?
That'd be like so entertaining that it could be a good match.
I don't know about good match, Eric. But an entertaining spectacle, perhaps. I certainly could have led the show with talk about Brandy and Lambert and the advancement of the Cody stuff, mostly in the Sammy Guevara vlog. But Brandy brought it on the mic. Dan Lambert instigated it. And, yeah, it's I assumed all along we're going to get a call on this and get into it. But your thoughts first specifically on Ryan's question.
Please do not have a match between Brandy and Dan Lambert. It would be horrible. It would not be entertaining in an ironic way. It would be the drizzling. I don't know if we can curse on this, but you know, drizzling S words, to use the old Stone Cold phrase. It would be terrible. And plus I don't necessarily know they want to do an intergender match on national television. They haven't done so yet.
What do you think they're going to do?
So, you know, Dan Lambert was out there kind of spitting fire for a while. His line about Arn Anderson, the man used to be a horseman and now he's just a whore, that was phenomenal. I mean, that was great. The Brandy stripper thing, a little bit misogynistic, but, you know, and I don't think you can just say, oh, it's Brandy, she's annoying, that justifies it.
That Brandy is a stripper name, or is Dan wrong on that, Eric? Have you researched it?
I mean, Wade, I don't know that much about strip clubs, but I think you're in the 80s, your stripper names, if you look up in the Truly Tasteless Joke book, Brandy, Tiffany, Crystal, those were sort of your stereotypical stripper names. There's a lot to unpack here. And so Brandy comes out, and she's booed out of the building, and she's doing a very much look at me, look at what I'm saying, trying to get herself over. I wrote down, where the hell is Cody, right? His wife is about to go head-to-head with two very large men and one weaselly 60-something-year-old man. Shouldn't he be out saving her? Shouldn't he be with a microphone? But at the end of the day, what I settled on in this – so this is a very weird meta angle that's probably too cute by half, but mostly because Dan Lambert is saying exactly – what's going on. He is calling Cody and Tony Khan out for using Dan Lambert's unpopularity and nuclear heel heat to try and get Cody over as a babyface. That would be fine. I mean, that might be more fine if Dan Lambert wasn't saying this is exactly what's happening. It's like he's doing a footnote, a DVD commentary while he's doing the angle. And so it sort of takes you out of it. and I think it works less. What do you guys think?
Well, Ryan, you talked about the match quality. How did it make you feel just as a viewer about Lambert and Brandy and the dynamic there and the crowd reaction and the lack of, as Eric points out, the lack of Cody?
Well, they would be able to pull off like a Vince McMahon, like Stephanie McMahon type like match. That was actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, there's entertaining and there's good, and they don't always overlap. And I can guarantee there would be no overlapping if Brandy and Lambert fought. I thought Brandy brought it on the microphone though, Eric. I thought like there was even a possible tinge of fans not booing her as much, like booing her out of the building, like when she first came out. I'm definitely not, you know, leaning towards, oh, you know, fans are going to cheer Brandy against Lambert. I still think even though Lambert gets just crazy heat when he cuts his promos, I think the animosity towards Brandy and Cody is going to persist. And I think fans see matching them verbally against Lambert is just like a EVP power play to try to get cheered because they put him against the biggest heel Mike guy that isn't occupied like MJF with Punk right now, thinking it'll work. And I think fans see through it, you know, and it feels a little heavy-handed. But that said, I thought this was like maybe Brandy's best performance on Dynamite. And I'm not saying there's been a lot of contenders for things that I thought worked really well with her. But she was just, she brought it. I thought, you know, by the end, it didn't last long enough to find out for sure, but I thought the fans were sort of going like, all right, she's all in on this. And she wasn't tripping over her words. And she was trying to own that ring against somebody as strong as Lambert. So I think I'm a little higher on her than I would have anticipated or that you guys are. But as far as the match goes, oh my God. I mean, entertaining in the sense of a debacle of just, you know, sloppiness. Yeah. But, you know, this would make Thunder Rosa and Jade Cargill look like a Flair Wyndham match from the late 80s.
I mean, the only way that match works to me is if Brandy is on offense throughout, because I don't want to see Dan Lambert hitting a woman.
Oh, they'd have to
right?
do, they'd have to do 24/7 yeah. style. It would have to be, you know, it would be Three Stooges. It's just, the, you know, roll-ups and, you know, what Reggie's been doing, you know, just avoiding, you know, Lambert runs into the turnbuckle when Brandy moves and, you know, that kind of thing and nothing hardcore. It would, and I mean, they might even add some sort of, you know, weird stipulation, like Lambert's like, I can beat you with my hands tied behind my back, you know, and like, and then they hold him to it or something like that so that he just doesn't get offense and she just embarrasses him. I'm not expecting any violence. This isn't going to be, you know, Sonny Kiss Joey Janela from Dark this week, where it's just a hardcore match with people going through tables. So if they do it, they're going to be, I have to assume, very careful about how they set it up so that there isn't, you know, Lambert just smacking around Brandy in a way that I think would be very off-putting to a lot of the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, your mileage on Brandy, I guess, tonight depends on, to me, a little bit, it's tied into where is this whole Cody thing going overall.
Right.
You know, is Cody going to turn heel? Is Cody going to continue this tweener thing as TNT champion, where he's a babyface when he's wrestling people you don't like, and he leans heel when he's wrestling a babyface for the TNT title, which was his first run. And I thought his first run as TNT champion was very good and very successful. Then he got the neck tattoo. Then he went and did the reality show. He got the neck tattoo, and it's all been downhill since. So if that's what it is, it, you know, but if Cody is actually trying to convince the fans, the third option would be he's going to just try and stay babyface. And if that's the case, Brandy is not going to help that effort. Brandy's only going to hurt that effort because if there's one act fans like less than Cody at this point in that promotion, it's Brandy.
Why is that, by the way? Why, if someone's just watching now and they're like, why are fans booing her? Like, what? Why is it that Brandy, and you're saying she just has no chance to help Cody in this?
You go watch season one of Roads to the Top, and you will have all the answers you seek.
It predated that also.
Yeah, I mean, like, she had five different character changes. She got rebooted and repackaged. The only thing, her best thing that she's ever done in AEW before this was the summer of 2019. She was having her first match, and they did this package with a promo where they showed her figures. I think it was figure skating, and she couldn't win the big one, and she's crying. She was the biggest baby face on God's Green Earth, and it was one of my favorite promos of 2019. And then it just was a complete disaster since then, where she became a witch for a while with her little coven of that included Luther, who, you know, talk about go away heat. Oof. Oh, Brandy's greatest hits, or misses, as the case may be.
Yeah, if you put together a clips of everything Brandy did in 2+ years of AEW on TV, and taking and then you note she's been gone, you know, off TV for a long stretch with a pregnancy, so you're looking at just over a year. I mean, it looks like a 10-year, like, chronicle of like someone who had way too many characters in a 10-year career. But man, she reinvented herself a lot. And then you tell people, no, that was all within 12 months and mostly within about 16 weeks. It's just like, it's crazy. So yes, I'm putting you on the spot, Eric, with that one. And I apologize, but,
no, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's jump back to, Ryan. Anything else you want to bring up? I mean, I'm sure we'll explore the Cody thing more as the show goes on, but I don't want to leave you here, hanging while we do that. Any other subjects or follow-up you want to cover?
I have a question on Colin Delaney. He was a world champion at a local federation pretty close to where I live. And I know he had some success in ECW, like WWE, like as like an underdog character. So could you see him like possibly pulling off an upset and being like a James Ellsworth like character for AEW?
Hmm. What do you have you seen him wrestle?
I saw him wrestle a couple of weeks ago. He actually was pretty good. He was wrestling a guy that was like 7 feet tall. And he lost his championship to that guy named Snoop. But, you know, he was pretty good on ECW, I thought, too, if you remember him from ECW.
So he's 35. You know, he's been around. I don't know that they would have fed him to I don't know if they would have fed him to Wardlow like that if they had plans for him, but maybe he gets, you know, maybe there's no shame in losing to Wardlow, getting powerbombed 4 times, but they bring him back as, yeah, kind of the lovable jobber who eventually, you know, upsets, say, a Sean Spears or a Scorpio Sky or something, where then, you know, the heel just can't believe they let their guard down and it turns into a little TV feud. I mean, those are fun to do every once in a while. And, yeah, I mean, I guess he'd be a good candidate. I mean, he spent some time in WWE, not a long stretch, but you know, some people are going to be familiar with him. I don't know a lot about him and his reputation as a worker and if he's got friends in high places or anything like that. What do you think of that idea?
I think you fine if you want to do that, but keep it on Dark or Dark Elevation.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think that's real fair. Yeah. Ryan, anything else for us? I didn't think we'd talk Colin Delaney before we got to CM Punk. but it's totally fine. Cause we'll certainly get to Punk. Anyway, go ahead, Ryan.
Well, the only reason why I thought that might could happen just because he did that gimmick in WWE, you know, so fans would be familiar that he's, like, possible pulling off those upsets.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I appreciate you asking about him, and you've seen him locally, and he's from your area. And, no, I mean, Ross got his name wrong. He called him – what did he call him? Not Cassidy. I don't know, some other first name with a C. And then he corrected himself. Right afterwards. That's bugging me. Oh, well, I'm not going to remember. But yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you can try that with a lot of people. I don't know if he's the best choice of all options, but, you know, I'm not against it. I know he's a local guy, and I'm sure you would enjoy seeing that, Ryan, seeing him get a little AEW storyline.
I don't think he's really local, but they just brought him in for the show.
Oh, okay.
I think,
well, you've seen
he was their champion.
Yeah.
So I think he was like, you know, driving like thousands of miles to get there for some reason. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Cool. Anything else, Ryan?
Well, I just want to like mention, like, you know, Barry Horowitz like did that winter gimmick in Global, and then WWE copied that gimmick, so federations have a tendency to use the same person for a gimmick, you know, that was made famous.
Yeah. Sounds good. I'm ready to switch topics if you want, though, Ryan. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yep. All right.
Yeah.
Sounds
Thanks
good. For... Thanks, Ryan. Yep. Happy New Year. I don't want to go too far down the road of booking Colin Delaney But I mean, it'd be a fun podcast, just kind of a special episode to just do a history of gimmicks like that.
Sounds like homework for Todd Martin to me.
Hey, if someone sends in an email question for the fix, he'd do it. He's amazing. All right. Our number 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Let's chat about Dynamite. Up next, and push one on your keypad, of course. Up next is Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, good to hear from you. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight? What stood out?
Happy New Year's, gentlemen. I'll get that email right out to the fixed mailbag. just wanted to I found it very strange what they did to promote the Bryan Danielson Page match that. And I'm just wondering, you know, did they just give the guys the night off as a Happy New Year, or it just seemed a weird way to promote their huge match on their first show on TBS to not have them on television?
Yeah, that's a top talking point from the show, Eric, is they've got a world title rematch, and we got a 2-minute, give or take, video package. That was focused as much on the judges, which I assume we're not going to get a decision from. I can't imagine them doing a 60-minute draw and having Hangman only retain his title because 2 out of 3 judges said they think he out-wrestled Bryan. That's going a long way to try to tell the story that Hangman can't actually win even as champion in a traditional way. I guess I can't rule it out. But, this was a bunch of tag matches. A bunch of tag team spots, a bunch of, you know, action. We haven't really gotten into, Eric, why you're down on the show, but the lack of Hangman Bryan first run original in-person in front of Jacksonville fans hype is it. I do assume Tony just said, you know what, I think we're going to do a good rating either way, and he did give them the night off. I don't think they were advertised for the Rampage taping that's going on now either.
Before I get into all of that, we need to put over Nick from Brattleboro, who just made an appearance on Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure over the weekend, I think, discussing the awards for WWE, what they liked and didn't like. And I think Nick was on Team Nick. So he definitely got in the mix of the never ending fight between Nick and Tom. So, well played there. Good appearance.
Oh, by the way, Nick and Tom are planning to do a day one pay-per-view preview episode that will be offered free for everybody. So if you want to understand what VIP members experience on weekends with Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure, a WWE centric podcast, the dynamic between them is I don't know. You have to kind of experience it. I don't know. What adjective would you use, Eric? You write for a living.
I did write. I haven't written in 6 months. Although
I wrote for the Torch. I'm insulted.
I wrote almost 5,000 words between a freelance story and a potential Torch piece that I'm trying to pull together yesterday. So it is not mean-spirited. It's fun, I would call there.
It's fun, but it walks right up to the edge. You know, you're like, I know they're friends, but Nick, come on. And Tom, oh, my God. You know, but my favorite bit is just how Tom is afraid Nick is going to get stalked because Nick gives away personal information about like the store, the coffee shop he goes to and what mall he's going to be at. And Tom's totally worried for Nick, like that he thinks Nick's going to have these stalkers who hunt him down. So like Tom cares. He might be a little paranoid, but he cares.
I'd be just more worried about the stalkers going against Nick, to tell you the truth.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Nick's going to be lost because I don't know if Charlotte Flair is booked for the day one pay-per-view, but her opponent is no longer in the mix if she was.
Right. Tony Storm. Fightful, I believe, broke the story. Am I right on that? Giving credit that Tony Storm out of WWE. I've already reached out to some WWE sources on that.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yep.
Yeah. She,
oh, wow.
Supposedly, she has to be released is the word going around, that it wasn't a budget cut, quote-unquote. I like her in AEW. Sign, you know, break open the back up of the Brinks truck and sign Toni Storm. Back when I watched NXT UK all the time, she was so cool. She can work. I'm a big Toni Storm fan.
as long as they don't have her cry, she'll be 100% better than she is on WWE.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I just quickly on the Nick and Tom thing, it was Sean and I were invited on for an end of year special. It was a blast to do. Everybody, join Go VIP for Nick and Tom's Great Adventure and for the Fix, and you'll have spent your $10 incredibly wisely. Just both those shows have helped get me through COVID, and I can't speak highly enough for all of the characters. And I also want to give a shout out to Pixie's sister Kitty, the dog that still has no name after 3 years, and of course Vector.
I didn't know that. I thought I've revealed it. Well, now I'm not going to say it. I didn't know that was a thing.
I don't think you've ever said the dog's name.
Well, then I'm not going to say it now. Then I didn't know I had the streak going.
Is this I met last month?
Yeah. So don't say it, Eric, and let's see if anybody knows his name. I didn't know. I wasn't trying to keep it secret. I just, you know, when there's two cats, you know. Although I walk around the house and just call them Cat 1 and Cat 2, and then I mention the dog by name, so
yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, well, anyway. I'm just I've never heard the name, so I just I just
no, you might be right.
But
you've heard him
back
bark
to wrestling. I thought it was
so.
We're not back to wrestling yet. He had so much fun in the snow today. He was just dark. He's 10 years old. He's just darting around in the snow, running around, leaping in the air, frolicking. It was just. It was right out of like a movie.
I had a golden retriever, and he would go into the snow, and it would just, he was like in doggy heaven. It was just how they can entertain themselves with a mouthful of snow. I mean, they're just, I hear you, Wade, completely. That's just, it's a joy to watch them.
Yes, totally. All right, so go ahead. As you said, back to wrestling.
So I was about to weigh in on Nick's point.
Yeah.
I, like Nick, was very disappointed if you were going to do the Family Feud gimmick on the top 10 reasons why I did not like tonight's show. The lack of a live Hangman Page Danielson head-to-head insult fest and just having a preview package, it would make the top, you know, the top five answers on the board there. Do we know who the judges are yet?
I'm sure hoping Eric Bischoff is one of them. I want him to be the guy who just, for whatever reason, gets to be on both AEW and WWE constantly.
I think he didn't.
I heard he's going to be on Impact,
Tony
too.
Khan.
Well, he did, but, I mean, Tony forgives, especially if you can have it's just this idea that, like, everyone's trying to win over Eric, and Eric's still just being Eric, but still people just, like, want him on the show for, you know, I don't know. It'd just be a fun bit.
Yeah, Tony Khan is going to redo the Terry Funk, Ric Flair deal from the Flair Steamboat match.
Yeah,
that would be. I wonder who he could get to. You know, it would be somebody debuting, right? You'd be putting him in a feud with potentially your world champ, unless you're going to turn Danielson back face and you have that person attack Danielson, or if it's just going to be one of those afterthought things that it's just three random old wrestlers from wrestlers past, years past getting a payday. But we don't even know, right? Which I think is an indictment of that was a pretty hot program. The 60-minute draw made it an even hotter program. I think that's why ratings were up the next week for Dynamite, because people missed it. And they wanted to, you know, sometimes the ratings, you hear about a hot show, you're going to watch it the next week. And I thought it was kind of booking mail practice to not have those two in a live angle, you know, going head to head, jaw to jaw, right before next. This match is 7 days away, guys.
Who do you want? Who would your choice of judges be, Nick? Have you thought about it? Like, just kind of plucking for people who have been, you know, friends of AEW, older wrestlers.
Yeah. Quickly, I thought of Bret Hart.
Yep.
They have two certified superstars who could Henry and Big Show. You know, I mean, they're announcers, but they're not announcers on the main show, and I think they could very easily fill those roles. As far as other legends, I don't know, you know, maybe they bring Crockett back and have him and him, you know, have him do it.
I don't know if he'd be a good judge, you know, credential-wise. Eric, does anyone come to mind?
Well, Kevin Nash had a real super high work rate, so why not Kevin Nash?
Because he might not like a 60-minute draw.
Yeah.
He might, yep. Like, yeah, he might walk out 20 minutes in and say this.
Fall asleep. Yes.
Yeah. Jerry Lynn, I think, would come across as a very dignified, low-key, cerebral, but, you know, on a serious level, experienced, unbiased judge. And then DDP, you know, he's always available. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been with AEW before, former world champion, and I think he'd get a little bit of a crowd pop if he showed up. So those two came to mind. Bret Hart, obviously, is a good one. They can decide if Ric Flair is worth it.
Actually cleared?
Sean Waltman is on a Legends program with WWE, so he cannot appear on any nationally televised TV show other than WWE.
Well, what I want to know, Wade, is has Tony called you? Have a representative of
no.
press there?
He knows better. not going to become a character on a TV show.
Nick, it's funny you should say that because I was one of the few eyewitnesses to the extended not one but two hugs Mr. Khan gave to Dave Keller after the Full Gear press conference as Tony was trying to leave the room. So, yeah, but Wade actually has journalism ethics, unlike some people.
Yes, no, oh, no, I know that. I was just going back to my boxing fan days. You know, they would occasionally have, you know, Dick Young from the Daily News would be a judge. You know, it just kind of the elder statesman journalist who would give credibility to the judging, that's all. But this is wrestling, I guess there's a difference there. What I wanted to just continue on this one thing is that I may be a rarity among AEW fans that I'm not super hot on Hangman Page. I was super hot on him before the pandemic when he was doing the Hold My Beer gimmick. You know, coming down, I'm not a fan of this moody millennial, and I would not be upset if Bryan Danielson won the championship, as much as it might piss off everybody else. I'm not a huge Hangman Page fan. I just don't enjoy his persona out there.
Eric, those are fighting words, but how do you feel about what they've done with Hangman recently?
My fear was that, and it is why I asked Tony Khan the question after the Full Gear press conference, my fear was that by putting Page in with Danielson, that Page would be overshadowed. And I am about as big of a Hangman Page fan as there could be out there. But Danielson has overshadowed him at every turn because Danielson is all world generational talent in the ring, on the mic. He's just brilliant. And so I would still be very upset if Danielson beats Page for the title to start the TBS era. I don't think that's the right move, unless you don't care about, you know, ruining Hangman Page and ruining him as a babyface for the rest of his time in AEW. But it is tempting, isn't it? Danielson is so good.
Well, I totally agree that it would ruin Page, and so I'm not necessarily advocating for it. And I think they've just kind of found themselves in this place because obviously it was going to be Moxley in that role.
Yes.
And then when they had to put Danielson in the match against Miro, they had the opportunity there to wait on Danielson and put Miro in against Page as a much more cleaner babyface heel dynamic, but they decided not to do it for whatever reason.
I think Miro's off shooting a movie.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, I did a little research for a piece I'm writing this week, and he and his wife are both listed as filming a movie called, I can't remember the name of it, but it stars like a bunch of has-beens.
His hot, flexible wife.
Yeah. Lorenzo Lamas is on there, and the kid from Breaking Bad is on there, right? It's one of those type of deals. B, C-level movies.
Nothing
okay,
having to do with Breaking Bad is B or C level.
When you see the cast, if you look it up on IMDb, you'll agree.
Fair enough, all you have to say
is Lorenzo Lamas, and it already goes below C. I mean,
it's being directed by Antonio Sabato Jr., the noted Trump supporter and former model. Yeah.
Wow.
Tell me they're not wearing Greek sandals, please. Anyway.
It's called Trailblazers. I'm going to let you go. Like two words if you're looking to go to IMDb.
Yeah. I'm gonna let you go. I just want to say is I think it's great that they grabbed up Mercedes Martinez. I think, like Hinton was saying, I think this – now, they have to work with it. They have to use it. But they've taken this women's division – I hope this is the last match between Penelope, Ty, Bunny, and I can't even remember her name now. And they go do whatever they're going to do. But I think they've really built up a nice, solid core of women wrestlers. Sheeta is showing up against Deeb. I think, and I don't know if you've noticed it, it looks like Nyla has trimmed down a little bit and tightened up, so she comes off as a lot more credible and not so much an unbeatable monster, but just a very strong wrestler, so that the people underneath her, you know, who are fighting her have a shot. You know, that was always my problem with Nia Jax. It's just she was so much bigger than everybody else. There was, you know, it's like, forget it. You know, no one can beat her. But I just think they've really got the makings of some nice matches, and I think it's going to be tough for Ruby against Jade. I think Ruby should carry the TBS title initially, but I heard your point that, you know, they kind of might want to put it on Jade for her star quality, but she's not ready. I totally agree with you there, but I'm really liking where the women's division is going, and I think Martinez is going to add a lot.
Yeah, and if they can add Toni Storm to the mix, you know, they're suddenly going to be in a significantly better position in terms of their women's depth chart, you know, and that's good. You know, they should be looking for opportunities not only to grow from within with a bunch of women getting reps on AEW Dark, but they shouldn't just keep everybody they've ever hired. You know, I mean, there are some women who just weren't ready for prime time, and, you know, and it's been tough in the pandemic to get better with so few indie dates. So, you know, hiring some veterans with experience is the way to go, and then develop some of the other women that they think have a good future but aren't quite ready yet. You know, get back to giving them reps off camera, or at least not on Dynamite, where it can hurt viewership numbers and also just kind of, you know, get in their head that they had a bad match.
Yep. I was doing a little bit of research yesterday, and on the AEW roster page, I think there's only somewhere between 20 and 24 women that are listed on the AEW roster, which I believe means they've signed them to some kind of contract.
Yep.
So that's not a ton. I mean, you know.
Yep. But not a ton of recognizable names, and, you know. And, I think there is, you know, I think the women know they've got to work for their TV time. You know, I mean, I had heard Nyla Rose was did intentionally lose weight for a variety of reasons, and just to be able to be more agile and work and look more, you know, give her opponents a little bit more credibility visually against her. And I think people were, you know, in favor of that, who were rooting for her to succeed. They thought it would help her work, her cardio, and just visually work. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, she's glad that you're noticing that, and I think it will help keep her in the mix, because I think she's gotten better over the last, you know, 2+ years also, for a variety of reasons, including just getting reps, you know, just getting in the ring with a variety of people in high pressure situations, and, you know, coming through looking good.
I credit the addition of Rampage. There was always a women's match on Rampage, so you get a minimum of usually a maximum as well of two women's matches in AEW every week.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Instead of just lazily slotting in that, seventh quarter, quarter seven, women's match and with no build, they actually have to spend time thinking about these matches and setting them up. And so that's, I think that's why we're seeing all of these programs going on.
Yeah, I just want to
cool.
give a shout out. To,
okay. Yep.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to Layla Hirsch. I remember seeing her way back when I was doing the Dark Reports, and she impressed me back then. She's just a little spark plug, and I love her. I just want her to do great things. And with that, I will say Happy New Year.
Thanks, Nick. Happy New Year. Yeah, Taz was good on commentary on Rampage, just saying, you know, he kind of speaks from experience. He had a low center of gravity, and that can work to your advantage against taller wrestlers. And, you know, it's important for the announcers to talk about the strengths that are less obvious of somebody who goes in there and it looks like they have a lower center of gravity and they're shorter than their opponents, and frame it as a positive. And I mean, Taz was just, I mean, it's knowing him from the indie scene when he had hair and wore like a single strap singlet to what he became in ECW. I mean, it was one of the great reinventions of a wrestling character that I've seen, and that chip on his shoulder that is there in real life that he just, Paul Heyman saw and built around and amplified. And he became, you know, still to this day, I think one of the better talkers of that generation and underrated. And now on commentary, he's just a joy to listen to because he's not just there to yuck it up and laugh and put himself over. Although he is doing all of that, I think in a good dose, like, you know, a good balance, but he's putting over the wrestling, he's putting over the wrestlers, and he's smart in analyzing how to accentuate something about somebody that will make fans look at them as more credible. And that's really valuable to have for on a show when you're going to have some women wrestling who fans aren't fully buying into yet, and they might have a bias against the way they look. And Taz goes, wait a second, before you judge, this can actually work to her advantage. And then the match is booked to play out that way. So, yes, I'm putting Taz over for his commentary, but I thought he's been really good lately. Eric, you have thoughts on Taz?
I like him on commentary. I'm curious as to whether his son knows how to sell.
That's never going to happen. Why do you care?
I hope to see it soon, him selling.
He's going to be a gigantic, gigantic star who never takes a bump and never sells. I mean, you just have to accept that. Have you heard the crowds? Can you explain to someone what's going on with Hook? Like, what's your perspective?
It's a cult thing that is just gained a lot of steam, and AEW is having fun with it.
But it's not random. I mean, they picked Hook because I think there. It's not like let's get behind a loser. It's not that 12th guy on an NBA bench who finally gets playing garbage minutes and the fans cheer because he's a freak or he's goofy looking. Like, I think people are reacting to him genuinely because they think he's cool and they think he's badass. And I think so far in the ring, what he has displayed is very thoughtful and well-executed and deliberate and badass.
I have a problem with him popping up from that maneuver that the Bronson, the bear, one of the bears gave to him there, the guy, the bear who did the job Rampage last week. I did not like that. I am on team. That was not good. He doesn't get to do that two matches in.
Yeah, I felt the same way Rich Fan and I on the VIP show Everything talked about that at a pretty good length at the start of the show yesterday, and went, you know, Rich went into the social media because Rich, you know, was on social media more than me, and that's one of the cool things about recording Everything with Rich is I can catch up on some of the things going on social media, and he said, yeah, there's a big backlash, and Taz got in on it, and there was an article, I think, at Voices of Wrestling talking about you know, why this was okay and why no selling works. But, you know, I brought up with Rich the history of the Road Warriors and kind of their scorched earth policy, no selling Jerry Lawler's pile driver back in the day and plowing through, you know, every credible AWA tag team and leaving everybody worse off when they left the territory. And that's not good, but there are instances where no selling can work for your character. But I'm waving a, as I told Rich, a yellow caution flag on this one, which is, yeah, let's not make that a thing he does a lot. Because I think it's just a bad idea, like just fundamentally for the sake of, you know, how the rules of engagement of how wrestling works. I mean, you can't just start arbitrarily no selling moves and expect the whole thing, the whole house of cards not to crumble. you have to pick your spots real carefully. But two, it could turn fans against Hook. You know, if it seems like he's letting it go to his head and no-selling people who fans otherwise kind of like. So we'll see. It's the first potential stumble in Hook's character portrayal in his very, very young career.
Well, there was a way to fix that, and it's do what New Japan does. You'll see Tomohiro Ishii, for example, will take a move, pop up, hit a clothesline, but then what he does is he has channeled his fighting spirit. That's what New Japan says, and then he collapses, right?
Yeah.
So if Hook would have no-sold it, hit a move, and then collapsed, I would have popped huge for it because it would have been a nod to, you know, what New Japan does and probably
right.
other promotions as well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, very good. Okay. I want to go back to Brandy and Cody for a second here. Zach in Texas said, AEW sent 2021 out with a bang. That Dan Lambert-Brandy Rhodes segment was great. I know Wade agreed with every word Lambert said about Brandy, and she gave as good as she got. It was easily her best segment in AEW to date. I'm willing to go along with this Cody stuff because he's clearly self-aware and not trying to force the crowd to cheer him. Mercedes Martinez showing up was a legit surprise. I said this last week, but AEW is just flexing their women's division now. WWE decided to stop emphasizing women, and AEW appears more than willing to pick up the slack. You love to see it. Zach in Texas. So first of all, and Rich Fan and I talked about this on the VIP show, everything also this week. No, you don't get to start saying Cody was self-aware all along just because he's
nope.
self-aware now. You don't get to say that because he wasn't. I mean, every trick in the book, including having Dan Lambert start cutting promos on him, Cody telling the crowd off air last week, hey, the cameras aren't rolling. You can stop booing me now. The shtick is over. I know how you really feel about me. Love me. Cheer me. You know, he didn't use all those words, but that's, you know, camera stopped rolling. You can stop booing now is what he said. And before that, you know, he literally cut a promo where he explained to the fans why they should be cheering him. And he had a belt, weightlifter's belt thrown back at him live on the air when he wasn't a heel. And look completely like, you know, like perplexed by it. And plus, I have heard from people behind the scenes that he was backstage downplaying the boos and acting like they were less than they were. People are like, okay, you're the boss. I don't want to get in trouble. You know, I'm not going to say anything. And then he'd go back to his locker room with his circle of people who hang out with him who would tell him what he wanted to hear. And, you know, it extended this longer than it needed to. But I do think, Eric, he's now in a place, based on that being the Elite segment, I'm sorry, the Sammy Guevara vlog, it does seem like he is, I don't know if the word is resigned to it, but I don't know what stage he's at right now. I don't know if he's at acceptance. Maybe he's reckoning. But there's a cognizant awareness that he is being booed and that he needs to acknowledge it and that pretending it's not happening and explaining to people why it shouldn't be happening is not going to stop it from continuing to happen. Explore that a little bit more.
Well, look, just 7 days ago, you can find this on YouTube, the Cody video in Greensboro, North Carolina that you've talked about. In addition to doing the guys, the cameras are off now, please don't, you know, please clap, right? The Jeb Bush presidential campaign, 2016 presidential campaign bit that became a meme, please clap. He did something else that night. If you keep watching the video, it's less than 10 minutes long. He asked Tony Khan, hey, introduce me again, Tony. And then he still gets booed. Tony Khan quickly moves on and introduces Hook, giving the fans something they actually wanted to see. And so Hook comes out and doesn't say anything, and I think slaps Cody at some point to get over. And Cody's sitting there. It reminded me, he's sitting there begging Tony Khan to book a match. The next time they're in Greensboro, book a match between myself and Hook. And I'm old enough to remember when Dusty Rhodes, when he fell from his perch as the top babyface and was desperately trying to remain relevant and hang on, booking the whole promotion around him in Crockett in the probably the late 80s by that point. Dusty would glom on to whoever the hot babyface or in this case a Hook, whoever the fans were reacting to, right? Hook's not being portrayed as a babyface, but that's the reaction he gets. And it just, to me, it smacked of Cody trying to glom on to Hook's heat. And I found that extremely pathetic. And I think Cody had a hand in Hook's training maybe, or at least the Nightmare Academy, Nightmare Factory did. But I mean, that was just the saddest thing. So to those, before we back up the, I'm willing to wait and see, but if Cody got religion, he didn't get religion until after that segment in Greensboro, because he was still acting as though his babyface run was salvageable at that point. So what is going on here? My best guess would be that he's not of the three options. He's going to try and turn heel. He's going to stay babyface, or he's going to be a tweener like he was during his first TNT title run, depending on who he was facing. My guess is it's the tweener role, because you can justify the boos. Well, they're just booing me because I'm being a tweener against this face they like. And I can do this open challenge thing and I can.
But he's going to get booed against heels, and then that just breaks down.
Yeah, if that happens, that would be the case. They're clearly trying to set this up for, Dan Lambert, looked into the camera and said, here's what we're doing, folks. we're using me to try and get Cody over as a babyface.
Exactly. The total going meta on everybody.
Yeah.
Pull the curtain back. You know what's happening. It's like Edge going in the Miz segment. I know what's going to happen here, but it doesn't mean acknowledging it doesn't make it predictable what's going to happen, or it changes the court, It's not going to change destiny, and I think destiny is, even if fans are booing Dan Lambert, they're going to boo Cody and Brandy, and they're going to boo them against everybody. Now, could they do some things to change that? I'm with Zach. I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was Brandy's best segment. I thought Brandy by the end, I sensed maybe was winning over fans a little bit with her determination and bravado and sure-footedness and just taking it to Dan Lambert, who gets booed a lot, Dan gets tons of heat, and Brandy was set up as someone to come out there and match him verbally and not back down. Is there a chance that this can be reversed? Sure, but Cody can say, oh, cheer me or boo me. I love you all. I'm thankful for fans who are cheering me and booing me. And you're going to be along for a great ride, and it's going to go places you don't expect. I don't know if that means it's a master plan or he's still just white-knuckling his way through every week trying to figure out how to reverse course so that he can get fans to cheer him again. But he's just sort of prepping people for – you're going to see some weird things in the part not spoken out loud is because I'm going to desperately try to get you to cheer for me again. And so you might not understand what you're seeing because it's going to be unconventional. And it's just week after week, something new – they try something new with Brandy and Cody to get him cheered. But I just – and it's not – this isn't like – Cody doing anything wrong, especially wrong right now, as much as I just think fans have decided they're going to boo him and they're going to boo Brandy and they're not going to listen to logic. I just think fans are determined to not have their mind changed now. And I don't think there's much of anything you could book to change that. It's at this point, it's sort of like Hook getting cheered. It's just a thing and it's got to play out. And if Cody fights it, it's going to give it more energy. And it's like you say, Eric, with a Lambert promo explaining what he's doing, that was meant to be disarming and meta and, hey, fans, wink, nod, we know what's going on here. But I think fighting it is just going to give it more energy and it's just going to last longer. So if Cody really, really, really wants to be a babyface and cheered, if that's still his mindset, I don't think it's going to work. So I don't think the tweener thing is makes any sense. He's going to get booed against everybody. That's not a tweener. That's a rejected baby face. So he's got to just be willing to go heel for a while. And just as Roman Reigns did or has, and let go of, how hurtful it is that the fans turned on him. Cause he is a co-founder of this company, as you pointed out, and part of this legendary wrestling family. He went out there with Sammy and had a really good match. He was talking in that blog about how hard he works. He doesn't take days off. I think, people who are beneficiaries of nepotism or have family in the business ought not speak out loud that they're not. I don't think that plays into it. Just let it go unsaid, work hard and see if people notice. But I don't know, Eric. I just think he's still – I'm curious to see where they go with it, and I still don't know. But the Brandy thing doesn't make me think Cody's going heel or embracing being a heel or a tweener. That was meant for Brandy to shut down Dan Lambert and get cheered. She wanted to be cheered.
Yeah, it's a heavy lift for Cody to get back to the babyface path, and I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not sure if he's fully accepted that yet. I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks. They did plant – so there's a thing we haven't talked about yet, two things actually, where they planted a seed that I thought was weird, and then CM Punk's promo was also very weird. So in MJF's promo, he talked about something called the Face of the Revolution ladder match, which I take issue with, because how does he know about this? I don't recall Tony Khan talking about this or the announcers talking about this. So they're like talking about this thing they haven't set up and we don't know what it is. But in your recap, you say the winner gets a TNT title shot. And so MJF said, well, Wardlow, if you win that match, which I know you will, you have to give me the title shot according to your contract. And they bring in Smart Mark Sterling to reinforce that. So is that a TNT title shot on TV? Is it going to take place? Is the ladder match going to take place at Rev? And if MJF gets the title shot, the current TNT champion is Cody. Are they really going to redirect? And then MJF talked about how so that's point one. And point two would be MJF talked about how I just thought it chalked up to chicken crap heelness that he was moving on past CM Punk and they weren't ever even going to have a match, which I didn't think anything of. And then CM Punk comes out and says, oh, if MJF doesn't want to wrestle me, that's fine. What? Really? And you start putting dots together. The dots I was putting together is MJF he used to be talk about how he wanted a world title shot. Now he's talking about taking Wardlow's, if Wardlow wins a TNT title shot, he's taking it, not Wardlow, or maybe Wardlow gives him the belt. It couldn't even makes, but are they going to is Cody going to get Dan Lambert and MJF, two of the over actual heels in the promotion, in this valiant attempt to turn him babyface, and we're not going to get an MJF CM Punk match? We riot.
I think we're still going to get CM Punk and MJF. I get why what was said made you think that. For sure, and that might be a mistake in execution, because I think we're going to get, Punk against MJF. I think Punk is like, you're not worth the trouble. I want a world title shot too. You talk about wanting one, Punk put his name in the hat for that also, but he's sort of going, you're not worth the trouble. And I think that's going to upset MJF, and MJF's going to want to prove that he's not scared of Punk. That's kind of in a macro sense, I think, where we're heading. MJF said he's also going to, be lacing up the boots and building up a winning record. So he's going to go from not wrestling all that often to apparently wrestling more often. I don't know how that leads to things with Punk. I think the Wardlow thing, I think, can be on a separate plane. And I don't know how long, if Cody's going to have the title by the time Wardlow gets that shot. But by that point, I think fans are going to cheer Wardlow and boo Cody. And Wardlow's going to not hand the title over to MJF and rip up the contract and say, sue me or something like that. And that's going to lead to, MJF and Wardlow is a feud after Punk and MJF have their match.
Okay, so the way you're explaining it, my guess is, so MJF and CM Punk was the hottest thing they had going post Full Gear. I was in Chicago the night before Thanksgiving when they did that crazy promo that everyone's 20 minutes that everyone was talking about for a few weeks there. And it was, that program was their top, the match everyone wanted to see. If Punk Kingston was the match everyone really wanted to see Full Gear for, well, it became Punk MJF. So maybe they're turning the heat down on it because they don't plan to deliver it until Revolution. And that's 2 months away still.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's a fair interpretation,
I guess. All right.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, he said, sooner or later, I'll see you in the ring, and it'd be a real shame if someone interfered with your quest for the gold. So I think I think this is going to continue. I don't think MJF wants to work with Cody because MJF wants to be a heel who's booed. And MJF's up for a lot of things. I don't know if MJF wants to be the guy who's the next in line after Dan Lambert to try to get people to cheer Cody. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe MJF thinks, I want to be the guy who could do it when Dan Lambert couldn't. And he would take it on as a challenge. The problem is MJF went after Punk, like with no restrictions that I could tell. And Punk took it. And then, fought back. I thought Punk seemed real sure-footed and comfortable in the ring tonight. And having MJF to play off of, I think, is helping him And I thought Punk was most in, not I'm returning and I'm a big star and this is a new place mode, but just back to being CM Punk. I thought tonight was really good. If you turn, I'm not saying you have to turn off the sound for it to be good, but if you turned off the sound, you would just see a guy who's just comfortable and in control and, you know, and isn't searching for words or trying to get his legs under him anymore. MJF, maybe he's up for the challenge, but I don't think it would work. I think he would tear Cody apart, and I think the fans would go, yep, everything he's saying is true, and it would just make them boo Cody more. Maybe MJF secretly would enjoy that and say, if Cody wants that, then bring it on, let's do it. But I genuinely don't think MJF wants to get cheered at a time when he's trying to culminate this angle with Wardlow to try to elevate Wardlow into what Jim Ross says every time he is anywhere in the vicinity of Wardlow, which is this guy should be a pillar, he's going to be a big star. You know, Ross loves Wardlow. And they have plans for him. And so I just think MJF feuding with Cody and then getting cheered in the process, which I think is inevitable with all due respect to MJF's attempt to get booed. If he tried, he couldn't help himself but tear Cody apart in a way where fans would go, that's right, thanks for reminding me why I hate Cody and Brandy and why I like booing them. Or maybe not hate them, but why I enjoy booing them so much. So, yes, I get they threw a lot of things out there, but to me, I think we're still headed to Punk MJF, and they're just taking a different road than just yelling at each other every week.
Yeah, I just feel like you're at a boil and now you're turning the heat down. And then I guess those two probably won't have too many problems even on a 1 week rebuild, right? Since they did a build, they're going to have to do a rebuild. They could just get in the ring and hurl more insults at each other and people will go nuts again, probably. But it was just weird. A weird MJF promo, and like it's almost like a side quest before he gets to Punk. And I'm not, you know, I like linear storytelling a little bit more. I am old school enough and old fuddy-duddy that way. Like, okay, you've done the promos, now give me the match. And I don't think that's an unreasonable position to take as a wrestling fan.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me if I'm re-asking a question you covered already, but the Cody vlog. Is there anything you can extrapolate from that I haven't touched on or that you interpreted differently than I did in terms of his mindset now? You jump back to what happened last week and, you know, in response to Zach from Texas in our emailer saying, you know, Cody's self-aware. And it's like you can start saying that now. You don't get to say it. He was self-aware a week ago. I mentioned that Rich and I talked about that. But what did you pluck from that? What's you look into Cody's eyes and you see him – you know, talking about what he's thankful for and, you know, cutting this kind of weird, just out of nowhere, sitting at a desk promo, self-assessing himself and his life and how a baby has changed me in ways everyone said it would and it has. But also, I'm not a beneficiary of nepotism. And I don't know. Yeah, what did you pluck from that?
So I actually transcribed that call or that Sammy Guevara blog promo from Cody for the piece I'm writing. And the part where he was I thought it was funny. He was saying a bunch of no talent hacks are going to be, you know, get to ride the convention circuit for 3 years off of this, off of their appearances in Sammy Guevara's blog. I thought that was humorous, and I think that was just him poking fun at them in something he didn't think anyone was going to see. The newsworthy part, was he healing? He said the quote about the sacrifices, like drinking Diet Coke at parties and spitting the licorice into the cup at parties where, quote, where people are just eating gluttonously and drinking so he could look good with his shirt off. I mean, he's healing on your average American, I suppose, right? Eating gluttonously and drinking at a party.
Touting Diet Coke as a health food of all things?
Well, he has to drink Diet Coke so he doesn't get fat. I don't think
he's touting it
as a health food, yeah.
You know, but it, relatively speaking, it was sort of a weird thing. But I get it. It played into the point he was making, watch calories.
So, you know, you might think he's healing at that point, right? He's not begging Tony Khan to help him glom some of Hook's heat off of him in Greensboro the next time. And so the closing quote is, I'm thankful to the fans that cheer me, and I am thankful to the fans that boo me, because both sets of fans are getting ready to go on a ride that is just bizarre, and it's not the path that you think. We're not doing what's been done before. Now, how much of that, what does that mean? How much of that is Cody is just not a very self-aware person, and so he thinks, you know, like when they did the baby reveal, as if he were the first person in the world who ever procreated.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so it's hard to tell. You can interpret that as, I interpreted that as maybe he's going to be a tweener because it's a ride that's just bizarre and it's not the path you think. The path you would think is he's turning heel, he's staying face, right? Those are the two sort of binary options you've had in wrestling since the beginning of time. But also because Cody's not like a real reliable narrator of his own self at this point, his own career arc in AEW, we're not doing what's been done before, but maybe they are doing what's been done before. And Cody just thinks, you know, he's the first person to invent, since he's the person who invented having children. He's also the one, he's inventing something new. I don't know. I think that's why I settled on this tweener thing, because it's not the path you think. The path I would think is he should turn heel. Right. I mean, I think we all most did a survey. If you did a torch poll, maybe that's a good torch poll question. What should Cody Rhodes do? And give him those three options: stay babyface, turn heel, be a tweener. I bet turn heel is the majority opinion on that.
And what defines a tweener? Someone who gets booed no matter what they do, but they wrestle babyfaces and heels. Is that
actually being
a tweener?
Cody's first run as TNT champion, however long that lasted, when he had the open challenge and when he was wrestling baby faces, I think Scorpio Sky might have still been a baby face then. I think he challenged Cody during that run. Cody would lean heel. He would work heel if he was wrestling a baby face, and he would wrestle as a baby face if he was wrestling a heel. And
we were reading into that, trying to think, oh, this is something. What color trunks is he wearing? Or, you know, like everyone's trying to read into it. And, you know, I think the question is he playing three-dimensional chess or not? Is he messing with us knowing how we're going to react? Or is he just sort of, it's more simple and stripped down, which is, well, when I'm against a face, I'll heal it a little bit, but I'm not going to think a lot. You shouldn't read much more into it.
I think what you said at the beginning of this post show it might have been on Focus on AEW, which I also listened to right before the post show. You said that I think you said Cody may try and play it off as this is what we're doing all along. That is demonstrably not true, right? I mean, he could say it, but that doesn't mean it's true. I spent most of my journalism career covering politicians. They say a lot of stuff. Sorry, I'm cleaning up my language, but it doesn't mean it's true, right? Just because you say it doesn't make it a fact. And I don't know. It's Cody. The troubling thing to me in this Cody, as Cody has floundered about, and you asked Tony Khan, you pressed him, you asked maybe four or five questions in a row about Cody, and Tony Khan just kind of threw his hands up at the end and sort of acknowledged that Cody was you know, a little bit of frustration with Cody. And then when I asked him about it, like 2 weeks later, 10 days later, after the pay-per-view in Minneapolis, Full Gear, and he gave the John Cena WWE answer. As long as the fans react, that's what we care about. Is Tony Khan just a non-confrontational person? Can't he just put his foot down and say, Cody, this is what you're doing? I mean, there seems to be a track record of this, and this is probably a whole other separate podcast we could get into, but Kenny Omega's doing his weirdness, his goofy faces, and he's the darn promotions champion. And Tony Khan's just letting it go, even though it's annoying and lame and not befitting a champion. I mean, there are probably other examples of this as well, where guys just get to do what they want, and Tony's too busy, or Tony just is he seems like a nice guy. Maybe he's just a non-confrontational person. I mean, I just have a different personality. I like negotiating the price of a car. So maybe I'm just I don't have the Midwestern knife. Maybe I'm just inherently an a-hole journalist at heart, but man, you're the man, you're the boss. Tell them to do what you want them to do. Or I don't know, but I don't know that we have time to get into Tony Khan's psyche and personality here.
I mean, he's a few years older than Cody, but I think he sees Cody as a bit of a contemporary. They're both, you know, close enough in age. And I think as Tony gets older and he gets more experience and has more success, the confidence to confront wrestlers will grow. Now, I think Tony has a lot of confidence. I think Tony is what you see is what you get with him. And I've asked around enough. And people just say he's just such a nice dude. Like, I mean, I can't find anyone to say anything bad about him. I mean, and not that I'm like searching, tell me something bad and scandalous about Tony. I just genuinely ask people, what do you think? How is he as a boss? How is he as a person? And people can't say anybody in AEW I talk to. They go, oh, thank you for asking. And then they just tell you these great things about him. And it's not, he pays me well, so I'm going to kiss his ass. Like, these are just people who wouldn't say that to me in a private conversation. They just love him. I mean, like, so I think Tony likes the positive relationships he has with wrestlers. And I do think he is, I think he does have his way of making clear what he wants. And I think it has led to some issues. I think when Tony launched AEW and he did not offer part ownership to the co-founders of All In, instead he gave them a title and contracts that can run out and then they're gone. They got titles, EVP, instead of points of the company. He immediately said, I'm the boss and you guys aren't co-owners. I'm making this happen. You know, and I'm going to pay you generously, but this is all me. And it was early on, you know, when they took that first Christmas break and Tony just wrested control of the book after giving too much leeway to the EVPs, some more than others, to book their own stuff. And he said, no more. I'm going to start saying no. And so I think Tony's so nice and so non-confrontational that it doesn't take him a lot to steer things in a different direction and people to know, okay, Tony's boss and what he says goes. So I'm thinking with Cody that, one, I think Cody is a unique person. And I think people like Cody, but I also think people can be confused by him and not sure how to deal with – I don't think you deal with Cody when things aren't going well the same way you deal with the Bucks. And so I just think Tony knows Cody well enough. I'm not saying that there hasn't been tension between him and all the EVPs, probably less so Kenny, just because Kenny is not a serious person. But the Bucks and Cody are. And so I think he's learning and navigating as he goes how to deal with all this. But I guess rounding it all out, I would say that Tony has his way of making clear how he feels and steering things in that direction. But I think it comes from just having the power to do so rather than explaining to someone that he is the powerful one. I think he just, people know when he makes a decision, that's the way things are going. So with Cody, I just think I think Tony's giving him all kinds of latitude because Cody just feels really strongly about wanting to be a face. But I think, and I don't know this from, I'm not like talking on revealing information on background that I can't quote Tony on. I just don't know. But I just think Tony's like, let's try to make this work. And when it doesn't work, we're going to do something else. And I think we're almost to that point.
Well, it's taken long enough.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're Cody, you know, you're a co-founder, you're an EVP, and I think there's a sense of sympathy for how much this might be hurting Cody. That's causing a little more tiptoeing than there would be otherwise around it.
The weird part is I'm sitting here putting the boots to Cody. I like Cody as a performer.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the all in match and the level of heat he had against Nick Aldis. It was crazy. It was hair standing on the back of your neck, constant level of heat for the entire match that in my experience was only equaled when I went August 20th to see CM Punk at the United Center come back, right? That was the only other comparable heat, just that sustained level of heat. And so I think he's getting a raw deal. I also think he brought it upon himself, right? You know, and here we are.
Yes. Okay.
He's a big star. Yeah. I mean, you know.
No.
Yes. He's worth salvaging. He's worth investing time into. It's just I'm a little irritated that we have to spend – every podcast now has to spend 45 minutes out of the first – you know, out of a two-hour podcast talking about Cody. Hey, if Cody's not – you know, it's like that Homer Simpson episode, Itchy and Scratchy, where they had Poochie the Cat from the eighth season of The Simpsons. Again, I don't know this off the top of my head. I've been researching it for a Torch piece I'm writing. It's – Homer's like, well, the key here is – even if Poochie isn't on screen, everybody should be talking about Poochie and asking, where's Poochie? And that's where we're at with Cody right now. Cody is Poochie.
And that was Dusty. You know, David Crockett has brought memories back. You know, Dusty as Booker and lead babyface would have everybody talk about him throughout all the TV shows. And by the way, I don't think that's – I think that's a good practice in sprinkled in now and then in the right circumstances. Like, I think AEW should do more of that with their world champion, is have other people talking about the world champion's program, you know, what they're doing, especially when there's a big match coming up. Like this week, I would have had interviews with wrestlers who were talking about their match and their – the current match or future match, but also be asked, hey, what do you think about next week's Danielson Hangman match? Like, I would have had, you know, whether it's Marvez or whomever holding the microphone, or Tony or whoever holding the microphone, I'd have everybody asking, oh, by the way, before you go, your thoughts on what's going to happen next week. Like, I would have made that seem like the talk of the town. But fortunately, Eric, I did deliberately start with the Bucks and Adam Cole, because I felt like we'd get to Cody later and it would be longer than a 7-minute opening segment before intros.
I feel like we're MJF and CM Punk going on and on and on and on at during the show here.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I think it is fascinating, and I think every week we get something new. You know, we got the vlog from Cody and Brandy's promo tonight, and I'm interested in it. And, you know, watching Roads to the Top, I mean, I saw it in the vlog too. I love Cody's sense, his deadpan sense of humor. Like, I get a kick out of his personality, and I'm not always sure he's aware he's deadpanning. You know, like, I'm still trying to fully figure him out, but he's very,
And speaking of which, I could use this to segue to another thing I want to bring up,
absolutely.
Which is, did you notice that they're burning off the Cody Ethan? Is it Ethan Page? Going to be on Rampage this Friday, so they're probably taping it as we're talking here, or already done.
Yep.
And so, they don't have Battle of the Belts is less than 2 weeks away. It's like a week and a half away. We've got one match: Riho and Britt Baker.
Well, Eric, I'm gonna actually read an email about that, because that's up next here. Mike from Chesapeake, Virginia said, hey, Wade, and whoever this week's awesome guest co-host is. There you go, Eric. You got called awesome.
Yes. Generic co-host got called awesome, but I'll take it.
Maybe he thinks you're awesome because he knows your voice. He just couldn't think of your name when he wrote the email. That's possible.
Sure.
Okay, we'll go with that. I was hoping I could get your guys' thoughts on the upcoming Battle of the Belts show. Me and a buddy got tickets and are going to be driving 5 hours to see it. First, it was announced that it will only be an hour long. Now, here we are, 10 days away, and the only thing announced for the show is Baker versus Riho? It's pro wrestling, so I know I'll have a good time, but I'm getting the sense it's just going to be an extra episode of Rampage with a different graphics package. Should I hold out hope for something special, or do you think the event, unfortunately, is just in a bad spot, being overshadowed right now by the TBS debut? Keep up the awesome work, and everybody go VIP. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, when Battle of the Belts got reduced to a one-hour thing, I mean, I stopped even taking it seriously. I mean, it's just like, it's an extra Rampage. That's all it is. It's an extra episode of Rampage with a different graphics package. I mean, there's big matches on Rampage all the time. Like, even, you know, Cody Sammy last week, they could have put that on Battle of the Belts, and people said, hey, really good match. That's a big star in Cody. And, you know, and Cody against Sammy, it feels like a fresh, novel, big-time match. That absolutely could have been the centerpiece of a one-hour Battle of the Belts show. So to me, the Battle of the Belts brand, and now they're calling it Saturday Night Fights, so they're like double branding it. I'm not saying it's dead on arrival, but I think there's going to be a lot less excitement over it, because it doesn't feel like a free mini pay-per-view anymore. It does feel like just an extra tangential hour of Rampage where they're going to put a title match on it. So I assume you're going to get a lot more, Mike, than just that one match. That'd be hilarious if they just have
Mike,
one match.
Yes, Mike, you can get there an hour and a half before bell time for Battle of the Belts, and you can see a bunch of squash matches get taped. Boy, I got to tell you, that's some compelling stuff, especially when you're writing a report for The Torch, and you get people on Twitter and your DMs who are writing for the Observer website wanting to know who won the matches that you're posting pictures of. It's real exciting stuff, definitely worth a five-hour drive. But wait, there's more. So it's Battle of the Belts. In theory, those are title matches, right, that they're going to have. And we've got the one match, but the tag team titles are going to be defended on next Wednesday's Dynamite, I believe. I believe that's the case. I think we finally get the Jurassic Express Penta and Phoenix Lucha Bros match. And I would not be surprised if they put the belt on Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. I think that would not shock me at all, because Christian does a nasty heel thing that they're not comfortable with, and they get the belts, and then they're very uncomfortable with it. But that match is being blown off that Wednesday. And yep. Then the men's title match, there's a men's world title match on Wednesday, the Danielson and Hangman Page. And then, you know, as I mentioned, the segue that got us into this, the TNT title is being defended by Cody against Ethan Page on Friday after after Dan Lambert besmirched the wonderful Brandy as a stripper and on tonight's Dynamite. So, obviously the booking's got to play out and there's a Rampage. They could announce matches for a Battle of the Belts on Rampage. They could announce, you know, so Cody, let's play it out. Cody wins against Ethan Page. And then Scorpio Sky joins in a beatdown afterwards, setting up Cody versus Scorpio Sky at Battle of the Belts, right? You could easily see that done. And then your third match is a tag title rematch. Does your world champion after wrestling was probably going to be a grueling match lasting anywhere from 25 to 45 minutes on Dynamite that Wednesday, do you bring him back on no build against somebody on Battle of the Belts? I don't know, but they've got work to do. The one thing I'm confident of is Tony Khan has had Battle of the Belts booked for 3 months and knows exactly where he was going with it.
Just as a brand, is Battle of the Belts hurt being 1 hour and is this a case of just the timing is tough? You know, as Mike put it, is this just it's being overshadowed by them wanting to pop a big rating on TBS, so they're loading that show up? I mean, there's only so much you can put in 1 hour, but we've seen from Rampage, you can at least have three big matches, two of which will be of decent length, and one, you know, they just get in and out of a little quicker. And they just haven't done that. I assume there'll be much more hype next Wednesday, but I think they just don't want to, you know, water things down and confuse people, because there's a Rampage, a Dynamite, and a Rampage between now
right.
and Battle of the Belts.
Yeah, I think so. When word first surfaced about this, whenever it was, sometime earlier in 2021, I can't remember if it was summer or early fall. I don't think they ever said how long it was, and then it got reported that it was just 1 hour. So I don't think this is a case of they wanted 2 hours and it was cut to one. I don't think they ever said, and people just
right.
naturally thought it'd be 2 hours and like a mini pay per view, based on what they said. Hours would certainly be better. I guess we'll see how it goes. I mean, if it does a good rating, why wouldn't TNT want to expand that to 2 hours four times a year or whatever?
That's the thing. I just don't think people are going to make plans to change their viewing habits around a special if it's 1 hour. It doesn't feel like an event. It just feels like an extra 1 hour TV show. Now, Saturday
it
night
is live.
Yes, and Saturday Night Rampage did well. You know, I mean, on Christmas night, it actually did the same rating, so the same percentage of homes watched, but there just were more people per home watching, so maybe that's a holiday bump. You know, just crowded households more of an issue, but it did a good viewership number. It did a good demo number on Saturday, so you know that's encouraging. But at the same time, you know, just anything on a holiday, I don't like to read too much into or extrapolate too much from it, but. You know, I just don't think you're going to pop a big rating where people plan their evening around a 1 hour live special. It just feels like something you'll watch if you get around to it. And you know, you want to form habits on Wednesdays and Fridays. And now you're trying to form a habit with a 1 hour out of your evening show four times a year. I just think that's hard to build a brand around just an extra Rampage. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, I think it is an uphill climb. I'll be watching it live most likely because, you know, I don't go out. Omicron is everywhere. And so I'm going to get some nice craft beers and hunker down home for the month of January. But and maybe they get that kind of benefit. I don't know. I don't know what's going on elsewhere in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A couple other things. Brian Pillman Jr., what you think of his promo tonight? I saw some compliments for it. I thought it was a little up and down, more confident than usual from him. But sometimes once he gets hyped up, he starts talking faster and gets too intense, and then he overmodulates and yells. And I thought he felt, you know, went down that path again tonight. But I understand why people see that as one of his better performances on the mic. And I thought there was it felt like genuine touching emotion when he said, you know, he never got to know his dad. And one thing he learned from him is, you know, you get one life. So I mixed feelings about it in the sense that I thought it was better, but I think there were still some things he still needs to work on.
I like, for starters, I like how whenever Tony Schiavone is interviewing somebody in the ring, it's not never an interview. It's Tony Schiavone says one question or statement, and then the wrestler takes the microphone from him, and Tony leaves the ring, right? I mean, it's every time. It's you know, most notably with Sting, but Brian Pillman Jr. I like the promo. I thought he got fired up. He showed fire. It's one of the first times I've seen anything that wowed me even a little bit from Brian Pillman Jr., who he's just sort of been there for me. I also saw that there was some division in the Facebook group that I post in a whole bunch of other longtime wrestling fans post in during Dynamite. And some people were saying it was too much 80s yelling style wrestling promo. Yeah.
Yep. That's what I thought.
It's the next logical step in this side quest for Malachi Black until he gets to where he's going next. When is that match? Is that next week on Dynamite, I believe, maybe? I think maybe next Wednesday we'll get to see Brody King if he's truly the guy who Malachi Black spit the mist into, who was wearing the mask in that promo from a week or two ago. That would be interesting. Black wins, obviously, and then Griff Garrison makes the save and Brody King comes out, or Brody King causes Pillman to lose, kind of a thing.
Another quick hit here as far as things sprinkled into the show. The Acclaimed, Max Caster and Anthony Bowens. Bowens was did more talking here than usual, and I thought he delivered on the microphone. I thought he was good. He said he's going to beat Darby's My Chemical Romance looking ass all over Jacksonville. Everybody loves the Acclaimed. That's a mic drop. Any thoughts on that promo in front of a graffiti-covered brick wall?
I don't think that match has there. No, like Darby and Sting have not been feuding with the Acclaimed. I don't think, right?
The Acclaimed just kind of jump around.
Was no setup to that match, and so in the early days of AEW, they would just throw stuff out there cold, and they would usually get away with it because it was going to be a good match, probably. So they didn't set this one up with an angle, right? Darby wasn't thrown down any stairs. Darby wasn't standing in front of a roll-up door, which we know in AEW, if you're standing in front of a roll-up door, you're getting thrown into it if you're the babyface. But they did do promos to set it up. I thought Sting's promo and Darby's promo wasn't very good, and it was a pre-tape, so that didn't exactly build confidence.
It felt like the fourth take out of eight. And they just decided that was the best one and they would go with it. Like, because that was next in line for me. I mean, Sting says something that just felt like, where did that come from? Oh, some people take their main events lightly. They treat their matches carefully. But I treat all mine like main events. And it's like, who is he even? I mean, who was he talking about? Why did he say that?
Is he defining down the Acclaimed? I mean, that's the one interpretation of that, right?
Yeah, but that's not a good way to build up a match. We're against these dark.
Or maybe the Acclaimed talk. Maybe the Acclaimed was talking trash about those guys being in the main event in the promo before, right? I don't think so.
And then Darby says, well, I can be the first or last match on the card. I take them all seriously and I'm ready. But it was like he didn't even say that particularly well or with confidence.
Right.
And that's why I say it felt like they had to have done like four more takes after that. And then someone just said, we'll make it work. And they just went with take four. That was not good. And I mean, Darby's not great on promos, and Sting has always had a propensity to lose his train of thought in promos. And you put those two together and you might end up with this. I just didn't think I had any idea what they were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, Darby's much better usually in a pre-tape situation or producing his own work where he doesn't talk than he is live. But I just, my notes say, who cares about the main event and the place on the card? I mean, I just don't care. And then I'm worried. So at some point, Max Caster put some like suntan oil or something on Anthony Bowens' chest, but he only like rubbed it. He did one or two strokes when he rubbed it in. So I'm worried Anthony Bowens is walking around backstage with like a bunch of unrubbed in, unevenly applied oil on his noticeable pecs. And I'm worried that he's gonna look bad on the show next week.
It was a Raj Howard Big Bang Theory moment there. If someone walked in on that going, what's going on here? Anyway, So let's see. There was something else I was going to bring up from the show that we had. Oh, just Wardlow. We talked about it, but how do you feel about Wardlow as a rising star? I thought the what was his line when MJF said, "If you win the belt, you have to give it to me." And it was something like, "Oh, is that so?" or something like that. It was just like his delivery was like very Kevin Nash-like, which is, well, you might be – it was just tons of like undercurrent to it. Like, well, first of all, that's news to me. Second of all, that's not going to happen. Third of all, you can tell yourself that, but you're fooling yourself. Like, I thought he, again, is showing both body language in the ring and on the mic in reacting to MJF. You know, I think they probably look at him more Batista-like, if we're to compare him to somebody. And I think there's some nuance there to his acting where he says a lot without saying a lot. What do you think?
Well, he was glaring at MJF throughout that whole thing, just staring daggers at him.
Yes.
And MJF is so oblivious, in love with the sound of his own voice, that he doesn't even notice, right? I wrote down that in the ring, Wardlow's getting kind of a Goldberg-like push, right? He just does the thing the fans want to see. In Goldberg's case, it was the spear, the jackhammer. In his case, it's just doing powerbomb after powerbomb. And so I have found it a little bit – it's just different. I wouldn't characterize it as good or bad, but is this the third week in a row that all of a sudden Wardlow is getting squash win after squash win? This is not a technique they've used to build anyone up in the history of AEW.
Right.
It like longer matches. And so what's going on here? I mean, obviously they're teeing this up. So are they going to pull the, it sure seems like they're going to pull the trigger on Wardlow versus MJF before MJF CM Punk match, which again, I find a little weird.
I think we might be looking at the escape hatch for that match. They're not, you know, they don't do a lot of interference, you know, shenanigan finishes except for referees being distracted. I'm wondering if that isn't where the turn takes place, where Wardlow turns on MJF because MJF, you know, it triggers it. And that's how Punk advances and costs MJF the opportunity. I don't think we're going down a road of like the fake out where Wardlow and MJF pretend there's tension, but in the end, Wardlow helps MJF win. No way. So my thinking is we might not get to that match until then. I mean, it feels like this has been going on a very long time, and I think they can stretch it out longer. I agree with you, though. It does feel like it's sort of like coming to a head. And again, I have to get the timeline of this ladder match they introduced without telling us about it ahead of time to earn a title shot and kind of get the timeline for how this is going to play out and when the title shot is. I just don't have a timeline clear on that yet.
Yeah, I mean, this thing's been on about as slow a boil as you can for, I would say, maybe a year. I remember MJF threatening Wardlow and saying something like, "Remember, you signed a contract with me. I'm feeding your family," and you know, I mean, in early 2021. So, you know, and now all of a sudden it's turned the flame on the stove up to 10 on this thing. So, you could have done it even a little more slowly if, in fact, you're not going to have the match until Revolution, which is what is it, the first week in March. March 6th, maybe, wherever that first weekend in March would be down in Orlando.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up, Eric, from the show that we didn't get to? Anything else in your notes?
I always laugh when Tony Schiavone talks during the matches because he almost never has anything to say other than being an amen corner for whatever Jim Ross says. And so in my mind, I have built up that Tony Schiavone only says a full sentence because Tony Khan is saying it in his ear and he's producing it. And Tony Khan, he may have even been in an interview with you where Tony Schiavone said that, he's produced by Tony Khan, right?
Yes.
He's in his ear.
Yes.
And so that's always stuck in my head. And so Tony blamed, the loss, the Christian taking the fall in that opening 10-man tag. He blamed it on a loss on discourse, and I think he meant discord.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he just in my mind he misheard what Tony Khan was saying.
Oh, funny.
Tony Khan didn't have great diction, and so because obviously, so that was amusing. haven't talked about that six-man with Kingston and Santana and Ortiz against 2.0 and Danny Garcia. Really? That, why are they – they're trying to build up 2.0 after positioning them as guys who maybe win a dark match on dark or dark elevation, but they do jobs. And now they've gotten two roll-up, grab-the-tights wins on Kingston, and it was either Santana or Ortiz. I can't remember which one. Yep. 2 weeks in a row. Why? Why are they doing that? You could have set up that Jericho return by just having the faces win there, and then there's a beatdown, and Jericho comes and makes the save. So,
I do want to apologize to Chris Jericho if he's listened for 2 hours waiting for his name to be mentioned. We he makes his return after weeks away, the big free agent signing, first world champion, this legacy star. And he makes his return, and we haven't even gotten, even dropped his name, and I even threw to you for anything else before he sign off mode. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, we should have brought him up. And, yes, he could have come back under different circumstances, including the heels, beating up the babyfaces after losing. I just think they think 2.0, they don't want to define them down as jobbers. And, Tony and whoever, likes them and thinks they're talented and they're funny. And so they're trying to protect them a little bit and not have predictable outcomes. But man, Santana and Ortiz especially are I'm not saying they're getting jobbed out as their deals run out. It doesn't feel quite like that, but they don't get the respect that you would think. I don't want to say respect. They don't get the protection you would think somebody of their reputation and resume deserve.
It was either in August or September when they put Santana and Ortiz over FTR, and I thought, oh, they are the logical next, tag team. They're getting a tag team title shot soon, and then it just never happened. I don't know why that is, but they're certainly underutilized, and I would put the tag belts on them at some point. I'm surprised they haven't already. They certainly are good enough to be in that position. The only other thing I had in my notes was that I liked that they recapped the Chris Statlander, Layla Hirsch feud from after their match on Rampage Friday night. It was nice to see Rampage acknowledged a couple times so that these are not just two shows and their own universes. And I will close with this. Sammy Guevara goes from being the TNT champion to coming out with those lame I call them Love Actually cards, because I think that's where they stole the gimmick from. And just, it was just sad. My, how he has fallen so quickly.
He's not a great babyface promo. There's something about him as a babyface that just feels he's got everything in life's going great for him. He's engaged. He's got this great, great genetics. He's got time to work out in the gym and eat perfect and drink Diet Coke and spit out his Twizzlers like Cody and do a popular vlog with his buddies. And he's just all smiles. He's won life's lottery. And I just don't know that wrestling fans are super into cheering that. He doesn't face hardship. And his reaction to losing his championship is, smiling and doing a sign gimmick again. And I get why they do that. It's just sort of a thing they do to fill time on a split screen break. And he's not no one's going, oh God, I wish Sammy would stay in the ring and talk to us for 7 minutes. He's not that. That's not his, as a heel, I'll take it. But as a babyface, that experiment failed, did not go well on dark, and they haven't done it since. They tried it a couple times on dark. So I don't know. I mean, it's his shtick, but it's not, I don't think it's getting people super emotionally involved. It feels kind of gimmicky and a little too cute and not, it's a way for him to react to the loss and do so in a way where he says, hey, I still have my eyes, I still have my sights set on that title. So it accomplished something in that respect, and maybe it helped people over in the break more than they would have, because Tony, studies those minute by minutes for the full split screen and half split screen break. So I get why they do it, and it's not like we lost out on a good promo, but I'm with you. I think it is a sign that he's not good enough on the mic that you just trust him to do that traditional post-title loss babyface promo. And he lost clean, what can he complain about? So I don't know.
He could have done a pre-tape. Pre-tape is always the solution, right? When you don't want to give someone a live mic.
Well, but I don't even know if he'll be that good on a pre-tape.
Yeah.
As a baby, he's like really good wrestler. He had a really good match with Cody. As a heel, I thought he was just this like mega rising star. But like I said, I mean, are you with me on the babyface characterization that he just walks around like he's won life's lottery and life is great and I'm super happy and oh, I won a title, but now I've lost it. Here's who I beat for it and I'll win it again, but I'm happy. I get to do my sign gimmick in my vlog. And I don't know that that's going to connect with, he's going to get cheered because he was part of Inner Circle. He's a pillar. And he's super talented in the ring, but I don't think he's going to get to that next level with that emotional connection with fans beyond what I just said as a checklist of reasons I like him.
Yes, agreed. I imagine life is going very well for him now, but I don't wish to get into online speculation about people's personal lives.
Oh, how is that speculating on his personal life?
No, what I said, right? I mean, why his life would be going so well. Personally, I don't wish to get into that social media mess that he's been embroiled in for a week or two.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Yeah, yeah. So online is, he released a statement saying that he and the woman he got engaged to on live TV, Pam, split up a couple months ago, and people naturally blamed Tay Conti for that. And she had to take down her Twitter. I think she took it down because she was getting so much online abuse. So that is
gotcha.
The speculation has continued, but they're human beings, and I don't really care about any of that stuff. But that is
yes.
I didn't want to make it seem like neither of us knew the score on that about why Sammy might be having a really good time in his personal life
and how people might use that against him also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Very good. Okay. Cool. Eric, thank you. As always, do you want
no
to talk
Javier?
No, he's been less frequent lately, and I miss him.
I just thought he was the chairman who closes the show. But thank you for having me. Appreciate
yeah.
it. We'll hopefully see you in print or on the Torch website in the coming days if I can finishing touches on this thing I'm working on.
It has to make it through the editorial.
I know,
yeah.
Ruling editor Wade Keller. I'll be worried that my verbs don't match my nouns, et cetera, et cetera.
Or you don't use a Oxford comma, a serial comma appropriately.
I don't use an Oxford comma because I was a newspaperman for many years, and we just don't.
Well, no, I mean, I think the Washington Post does and the New York Times doesn't, or it's vice versa. Like it's as far as I know, style guides, it's almost 50-50.
There are occasions where I am now doing freelance editing, and there are occasions when you have to use it. And I think one of the big ones is when the middle thing in a series of three has an and in it, that you have to put an and after that second one. You have to use the Oxford comma or it's incorrect and grammatically incorrect. So, but I, as much of an expert as I am, I will not clash swords with you on grammar issues. You're way better at that than I am.
Oh, thank you. I did not know that. I don't know that that's true, but I'll take the compliment. Thank you, Eric. We will talk to you soon. I look forward to your piece.
Thanks. Take care.